There's arts, there's tech, there's STEAM. Welcome to the Technically Podcast. This month, we're talking about the vibrant intersection of the arts and technology. Hello, and welcome again to the Technically Podcast, an ongoing conversation about how technology is changing local communities. I'm Christopher Wink, the co-founder of Technically. We're the network of local technology news sites. For those of you who have joined us over the past 6 months since we've launched this monthly podcast, you'll note that we have some changes coming up. First, I'm joined here by Zach Seward, our new editor here at Technically. He's taking over for me, doing day-to-day editorial in Philly, Baltimore, Brooklyn, and now Delaware. Hi, Zach.
Hey, Chris. How's it going?
So I'm a little bit more from the newsprint tradition. You're coming with a different angle, and we're going to do something with that.
Yes, that is true indeed. I am from the land of public radio, and I'm pretty excited about having this podcast to play with. So we took July off. I've been here since June. We took July off to retool some things with the podcast and create a little bit of a format for the show. So bear with us. It's going to be a work in progress. The podcast is still going to feature a monthly theme, but it's going to be a little shorter and feature more voices from outside the Technically posse. You can still grab us on Stitcher and iTunes. Just search for Technically Podcast.
So that's the podcast goal. It remains the same. We want to cover more broadly this idea of technology shaping communities, bring that to more of a national audience. Of course, as we do with all of our work, we rely on sponsors. That's both in the editorial and in the events work we do. And so the podcast is, of course, going to be no different. We're open up founding sponsorship opportunities for this podcast right here. We're focusing on technologists and entrepreneurs, all of the people who care about how technology is changing local communities. So follow along. If you're interested in one of those sponsorships, email us at business@technical.ly. If you get to us before August 20th, we can get you involved in our next September 2nd edition. That's going to be focused on the retention of college students. It's back to school time. What do you expect? And it's a big conversation in all of our communities and anywhere else in the country.
Yes, yes, yes. So with all that said, let's kick this show off with a conversation with a couple of our Technically reporters about what's going on in their markets in the world of STEAM. That's the fashionable acronym in some circles these days that adds art to STEM. That's science, technology, engineering, and math fields.
One, two, three, four, five.
We did it better than first.
All right, this is Chris Wink again, your editorial director at Technically. It's August, it's hot, so of course we're going to pun about STEAM. We're talking about A, the arts, how that intersects into the technology and broad STEM conversation that we're experiencing nationwide. I'm joined now by Juliana Reyes, our lead Philadelphia reporter, Brady Dale, our lead Brooklyn reporter, to talk just about that. Brady, let's focus on wearable technology, how fashion is informing what technologies on our bodies look like. What are you guys seeing in Brooklyn that's part of this conversation?
I guess a couple things. We just interviewed Becky Stern, who's the wearables director at Adafruit, which is actually a Manhattan company, but Becky lives in Fort Greene and does a lot of her work here. She's also a pretty well-known artist here. And she's been making cool wearable stuff for years. I mean, one thing to mention, she did it before she was at Adafruit, but she made a jacket that had the TV Be Gone technology built into it. So when she zipped it up, it would surreptitiously turn off all the TVs in the room, which was pretty cool. Another thing is Wearable New York or Manufacturer New York is coming to Sunset Park. And it's going to be a gigantic facility that's going to do all kinds of fashion-related things. But included in there is going to be this this innovation lab where they'll be working on the cutting edge, not so much of design, but technology and design, and wearable technology will be a big part of that. And, you know, we see all kinds of people around here working on different sort of wearable ideas, but I think those are two big ones.
Juliana, in Philadelphia, what's that capital A arts and STEAM looking like most prominently?
Hey, I'd like to talk about a recent development. So Youngmoo Kim, he is a Drexel engineering professor, and he's going to take a sabbatical this academic year with Opera Philadelphia. And so that's really unique In one way, because most professors aren't taking sabbaticals with cultural institutions, and he's going to be looking at how technology can be a part of the process of creating new operas. And so that's along every step of the way, music production, staging. With staging, it's especially cool. He wants to like look at things like using projections for sets and things like that, things that the Metropolitan Opera in New York are experimenting with a lot.
What is that the nugget there, that arts, as they always do, pushing the boundaries, and then maybe some of it will come back into normal function? What is the thread between opera companies and you know, shirts that turn off TVs?
I think that's right.
Yeah, and I think there's also, you know, that whole spirit of innovation. So Youngmoo was telling me, you know, like people haven't innovated, or like people haven't thought about new ways to develop opera in like 100 years. So he thought that this could be a way to sort of push that boundary.
Is the arts intersection new or sudden in technology? If so, why? If not, why haven't we been talking about it as much?
I don't know if I can speak to whether it's new or sudden. I think in Brooklyn was already an arts mecca and tech was coming here. So I think it was inevitable that they were going to start to interact, you know, partly because I think a bunch of artists just ended up needing jobs and they got them in tech companies because they're interesting, creative people. And that's just sort of how it worked out. And they started to inform each other. I think also it's because you get a bunch of artists and a lot of technologists together, they'll start to learn from each other and, you know, art will become more techie. I think... In Brooklyn, you know, I can't speak for other cities. I think in Brooklyn, it was just inevitable. There was already so many artistic people here that when another sector came, they were going to mix up.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think there's also, Philly, excuse me, Philly has like a really great grassroots art scene. And I think that, I guess, especially with just sort of how ubiquitous technology is, that it naturally inspired a lot of the artists here. And I think one example of that is Peter Erickson. And so Peter Erickson is, full disclosure, our business development manager, but he's also an artist, and he had an exhibit in May that sort of looked at like how the lines between reality and virtual reality and technology intersect. And it was really cool that he had like a virtual reality game built by a local game studio here, where you were like sitting in a chair that was suspended from the ceiling, and you had like the Oculus on. He also had someone doing like a live Tinder session, except that it didn't work because the Wi-Fi wasn't working very well. So it was a couple of those things, sort of like doing this technology stuff in real time, like as an art exhibit, and I thought that was really cool.
We need to pull the conversation down. So is there a project that's upcoming that you guys are excited by that represent this arts component broadening?
I'd like to talk a little bit about this project here in Philly. And there's an engineer. He calls himself an engineer for the arts. His name is Sam Cusumano. And he presented at an event that we recently just did called Innovation in the Park. It was this outdoor festival where we had scientists doing demos. So Sam uses plants to make music, and he corrected me. He corrected me at the event, and I asked him. I tried to make a joke, and I was like, "So, what kind of music? What kind of plants would make music like Lil Jon?" And he was like, "That's not funny, Juliana. And the plants aren't making music." he was like using them as sort of as synthesizers. I mean, he makes this technology where that can translate the sounds, I guess, that plants make. I'm not explaining this very well.
I just don't think he appreciated your reference from 2005 is, I think, more your problem.
Whoa, Lil Jon's turned down for what? Come on. Come on, Chris Wink.
Fair enough. It's a bigger phenomenon than Lil Jon could ever encapsulate. Brady, is there a project that you are excited by that represents here?
Well, you know, I'm hoping to start posting more just digital art pieces on Technically Brooklyn, just because I think it's such a big part of the scene. But in terms of more macro issues, you know, Kickstarter had its film festival this past Friday. And when I spoke to Julie Wood, one of their spokespeople at Kickstarter, and asked her, you know, like, what is this film festival about? You know, is film the way forward for Kickstarter? Her answer was, you know, where Kickstarter is focused right now is Kickstarter in real life. It's stuff that's crowdfunded that's appearing in front of you in some real way, whether that's the design creations that they brought to the MoMA design store or these film festivals that they're doing, you know, on two continents. And the gallery space that they have in their building. So I think the intersection between crowdfunding and art is pretty important, and that's one that we're going to see, you know, one of Brooklyn's biggest companies making a big deal out of for the next year or so.
So technology communities joining existing art spaces. We found that in Philadelphia, Brooklyn, and probably many communities around this country. Thank you, Brady Dale from Technically Brooklyn. Thank you, Juliana Reyes from Technically Philly. For links to any of the past coverage, we've covered these issues and many more. Please join us at Technically. That's technical.ly. Thank you. Turn down for what?
Heyo, welcome back. Zach Seward here, Technically Editor-in-Chief, and we're going to turn it down just a bit to check in on this idea of other cities. I came across a great post on Medium.com called Why Other Cities Matter. It's by Zan McQuaid, and she's a writer for the Daily Dot and the editor of the Cincinnati Anthology. She joined me from Cincinnati in Ohio, and I asked her this one pressing question. Why do other cities matter? And I guess for the listeners here, that's a capital O and a capital C on other city. What are these other cities and why do they matter?
Well, to give you a bit of background, I lived in New York City for many years. I grew up in Ohio, but I moved there in my early adult life. And when I was done with New York, I ended up moving to Cincinnati entirely of choice. I thought it was a great city, wanted to move there. And as soon as I moved here, I started really seeing in the cultural landscape and digital landscape that cities such as New York and LA and Chicago and San Francisco maybe were getting most of the attention, and all the other cities in the middle were getting very little attention in terms of what was happening there and all of the cultural benefits that there are in these cities. And I felt like the cultural landscapes was really being deprived of these opinions that exist in other cities and the cultural experience that happens there. And so I thought it was really important to emphasize that there are other cities in this country, and those other cities do have things that we should start paying attention to because they are really important to our general American cultural landscape.
Yeah, I mean, we as a news organization, we cover other cities. We're up and down the East Coast now, but we sort of take over the other cities along that corridor. I'm curious about tech in your other city and what seems to be going on in the Cincinnati tech scene these days. Anything interesting going on there?
I'm not a big part of the tech scene here, but I pay attention to the news, and what's happening right now is it's a really great city for startups. It's a very inexpensive city to live in. It's very easy to come here and start with an idea and grow from there. There are a lot of support systems here. There are companies that are seed stage startup accelerators, and they have mentorships. Places like The Brandery, Cincy Tech, Centrifuge, all these companies that are really investing in startups, in digital startups. And we also have a lot of Fortune 500 companies that are based in Cincinnati, and they're putting money into these startups. So it's actually a really great scene for people who want to come here with an idea and expand upon it and experiment in the tech digital world.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear sort of the rise of the rest, right? They're, like, every city is going to have its class of technologists at some point, and it's interesting to see what kind of flavors they ultimately end up taking on. Can you pitch me on Cincinnati? Like, if I'm a technologist looking to throw down roots in some city where the rent is cheaper than in San Francisco or New York City, like, pitch me on Cincinnati. Why should I come there? What's awesome about Cincinnati?
Well, I think the fact that it is already a city for startups, and there's already a base being established here. So there's a precedence for other companies that have already started here. There's Chore Monster is a good example that's getting a lot of attention lately. And a lot of these startup companies that are here are feeding off of each other, and they have they get together, they do, you know, digital mornings where they come and talk about ideas and throw things together. So the fact that there's a small establishment here, but you can also come and make your own mark. You don't have to, it's not oversaturated. You don't have to, you know, come into a San Francisco where you have have to make yourself stand out. It's a lot easier to make yourself stand out in a city like Cincinnati, where there are a lot fewer people.
It's really striking just talking to you and hearing such similarities to stuff like in a market like Baltimore, which is a market that we serve, you know, another small city kind of trying to feel its way through building a tech community there. Talk to me again, and you also, you're in publishing by trade, and you also write for publications like the Daily Dot and whatnot. And you've actually written extensively on sort of this weird intersection of place in a placeless world. I'm just really curious about your thoughts on the role of place in an internet-connected society.
It's that I actually have really specific personal examples of this. I work from home, and so I spend all my day on a computer, but I'm here in Cincinnati. So it's about trying to reconcile the fact that I am in a very localized place where people have a lot of concerns about the city and people are very involved locally, and yet I spend most of my days on the internet, and I'm essentially in New York all day by being on the internet, but I'm in Cincinnati and I have Cincinnati concerns. So for me, it's really about trying to figure out what's local to a person who spends their day on the internet. You know, you're dealing with people all over the world, but you have a very specific individual everyday experience. So it's about trying to place those things together and make sense of how they can feed off of each other and contribute to each other in terms of not just experience, but creativity and how culturally and, you know, just how it feeds into our experiences and into our individual lives.
Yeah, I mean, do you still feel like, you know, as someone, again, who works remotely every day, do you still feel like your local, your community is geographically defined, or are you sort of understanding your primary community in different terms?
Yeah, I actually just had this conversation the other day about I was up in Cleveland talking about the book up there, and we were talking about how some people think it's really odd that place is so important, and people feel the need to really define regionalism and say, oh, I'm from Cincinnati or I'm from Cleveland, when you could really have the experiences are very universal and you could be having them anywhere. But to me, I still think it's very important to recognize that your daily experiences, I mean, my view out the window right now is feeding off of how my emotion is. And, you know, so I think that understanding how the very specific personal local experience feeds into it is a really important thing to acknowledge when you're thinking about how regionalism matters and why it matters and how place matters.
So, Zan, I mean, technology is kind of all pervasive at this point, especially with the internet. How is that affecting, you know, expression? How is technology affecting the way we make art in this culture, be it in Cincinnati or in Philadelphia or in Baltimore or anywhere?
I think it's the same thing when you think about, you can be anywhere in the world and access the internet and put thoughts out there and really get them into the public eye. You can write something on Medium, for example, and it gets picked up and explodes across the country and people see it. And that's something that is a lot harder to do on paper. And so technology is really liberating for artists. It allows us to get stuff out there. It allows us to receive critiques from all over the world. And also just we have ears and eyes that we might never have, especially if you're writing about something really local. Like if I'm writing about the city of Cincinnati, if I were to do it on paper, it is a lot harder to get that to other cities and other markets. Whereas if I'm doing it digitally, it really reaches a lot more people and it's a lot easier to grow and expand and push out there a lot further.
Well, on that note, let's close. Thank you so much, Zan McQuaid. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much.
I might be inclined to put you down.
The music here is from Cincinnati's own Bad Veins. And if you want to check out Zan McQuaid's piece, Why Other Cities Matter, go to our website, technical.ly, for a link.
We might be compelled to disagree.
All right, changing gears, heading from the Midwest back east, we're heading to Baltimore. Wham City Lights started off as kind of a side art project from electronic musician Dan Deacon. Started in places kind of like this.
At one point, I'm going to give you the "it's okay to turn the lights off" sign, and then we'll kill it. I'll turn these sick lights on. I'll be nuts.
But now, Wham City Lights is at places like this.
Un mondo di giustizia e di speranza.
That's an America's Got Talent performance recorded last year, I believe it was. And in the background, in the arena, are loads and loads of lights on the screens of what appear to be people's smartphones. Keith Lee is the co-founder and CEO of Wham City Lights, which makes the technology that makes that possible. I talked to him recently about what's next for the startup.
We basically, focus on being a bridge between a performer and an audience. We offer the ability to add a sort of crowd-sourced light show that actually activates the audience members' smartphones to flash like colors and display content and, flash the LED in sync with the music and in sync with the stage lighting.
Yeah, I actually many years ago saw a Dan Deacon show in Washington, D.C. at the Hirshhorn Museum. And I was just curious in terms of like user experience, if you guys, besides sort of connecting the performer with the audience in a broad sense, how do you describe the effect of all these colored screens sort of flashing in concert with the performer on stage? What effect were you going for?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like the reaction usually at first is, people are just like, ooh. And they, because it's that moment of realizing that your phone has been like sort of possessed, and that all of a sudden this thing that is your like most personal, like intimate possession is now a part of this group experience. And you are sort of like, it's a little bit invasive, but at the same time it's exciting because it's like it's a really new way of using this device that we thought we had found all the ways to use.
Yeah, I think it's a cool effect. It's definitely kind of like that awe moment. You see a crowd light up with lights. I have a question though. Like when this gets common to the point where some of that awe moment value recedes into normalcy, is there a next product that you guys are thinking of developing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're not ashamed of being of our product being a gimmick. But, we are like pushing that and sort of pushing the novelty and trying to find where the edges are. I guess our focus right now is, first of all, sort of making the sort of light show itself like more dynamic and more reactive to what the performer is doing. So instead of it being a, synchronized light show that's sort of pre-made and, scripted alongside the stage lights, we're actually working on some hardware elements that that event organizers and artists can use to actually activate the phones in different ways using iBeacons, which sort of transmit a Bluetooth signal in sort of a radius around the beacon. And we're also working on a what we're calling the Wham Cannon, which is I'm not going to say too much more about that, but it's a way of shooting light directionally and affecting smartphones using a spotlight or like ray gun kind of metaphor.
Whoa, 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 whoa! You guys are developing a ray gun. Did I just catch that? Wait a minute! Come on, I gotta pry at least a little bit here.
Okay. Basically, there's this technology called collimated sound. And it's pretty much only been used by the military up until this point for usually for crowd control and maybe like on the verge of like torture. But we found a way to use that technology to actually activate, to send ultrasonic waves that are very focused and very directional to the point that actually the performer is going to be able to paint different colors across the audience and affect different parts of the audience in different ways by pointing this ray gun at different sections of the audience.
Wow. That's kind of amazing. I I hope I see that soon. That's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah. It's in development. It should be out in a few months.
Talk to me about your personal story. I mean, that you personally seem to encapsulate the intersection of arts and tech. You worked at Google for a number of years making dev tools, and then I guess left Google to pursue art at Mica. Talk to me about making that jump and a little bit about your own backstory.
I've always loved technology, and I've been like, I'm one of those people who was like a, you know, writing code when I was 12, and I just loved it. I love sort of creating new things and sort of enabling new ways of like thinking about like reality and like looking at, you know, sort of new lenses. You know, for me, I went to college and then I went right to Google and did developer tools there, and that was fine, and I got a great, it was a great experience in a lot of ways. I met a lot of amazing people. I got to see how a technology company works, but in the end, I just needed to be sort of creating something new, like using, you know, the draw of technology for me has always been to sort of improve people's lives and improve, like, the way that we do things as a society, and I just felt like at Google that was really limited. And so I left and I decided that art was sort of a space for this, that art was a space for exploring new ideas, presenting them, discussing them, a lot of dialogue, a lot of critique. And to me, I think, you know, WAM City Lights is a logical progression from that. I'm trying to blend those two parts of my background that in the end I don't think are that different. I really don't see entrepreneurship and the startup world as very different from the art world. I think they use different words for things, and I think that they don't really like each other that much and don't talk as much as they could. But in the end, it really is the same goal of like provoking conversation and enabling new ways to express oneself.
Well, thanks so much, Keith. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us. We recently wrote a little bit about what you guys are up to as a company, which you listener can check out at technically/Baltimore. Keith Lee, co-founder and CEO of WAM City Lights, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Zach.
That again, a little taste of Dan Deacon, and we are all set for this month's Technically Podcast. That's it. So check us out next month. We're going back to school on you guys with a show about talent retention, recruiting, and the big old fight against brain drain.
This show has been produced by our dear colleague, Zach Seward. Theme music is from Dan Papa. And of course, as always, remember to subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher.
And we really, really want your feedback. So let us know what is working, what needs fixing, how we can make this podcast a better product. Grab your phone, email us, info@technical.ly. And we're going to try something new here for the close. I'm calling it the Technically TIL. So here goes. Today I learned. There's this place in Baltimore called IMET, and they're doing crazy aquaculture research, trying to grow bluefin tuna to satiate the world's demand for this fine fish.
So if you're ever walking down the Baltimore Inner Harbor and you're hanging out by the aquarium, you see the Institute for Marine and Environmental Technology. They got these big giant vats full of really high-end seafood that they're growing and to change how we eat in the future.
Yeah, check out the story. It's on Technically Baltimore. I'm Zach Seward.
I'm Christopher Wink. We'll talk to you next month.
See you then.
Peace.